I've studied the form of comics intimately. I believe comics are our last link to an ancient way of passing on history. The Egyptians drew on walls. Countries all over the world still pass on knowledge through pictorial forms. I believe comics are a form of history that someone somewhere felt or experienced. Characters in comics are often attributed special powers, invisibility, X-ray vision, things of that sort. It's an exaggeration of the truth. Maybe it's based on something as simple as instinct. It's hard for many to believe there are extraordinary things inside themselves as well as others. I hope you can keep an open mind.
What I am questioning is your belief that you are something more than human.
And yet, it is true.
Hello, Now Playing listeners. It's co-host Stuart here, wishing you happy 2019. The new year is typically a time when folks strive to make improvement in their lives, adopt some new personal habits. I want to encourage everyone out there to make supporting independent podcasting a resolution in 2019. And you can do that by becoming a Now Playing donor or patron. I know, sounds a little weird. I felt very weird about making a commitment to Now Playing exactly 10 years ago when I joined my oldest friend Arnie for a discussion of all the films in the Friday the 13th franchise, as if anyone would want to hear that. Or so I thought. Honestly, I had no idea how transformative that commitment and those shows would be, but they evolved into a decade of podcasting about all sorts of movies, and I got to talk to people all over the world. What I've appreciated most about that journey is being able to say whatever it is I wanted to about a film without compromising my opinion to cater to corporate sponsorship. All I ever want to do is connect to folks who love watching movies as much as I do. I don't want to sell them products. I don't want to plug the next would-be blockbuster with empty praise. But because listeners like you who have dug into their pockets and joined the Now Playing team, I have been able to do that for 10 years. And I'll admit, sometimes when the films are really bad, I just need you guys there to help process the trauma. That's certainly been the case many times in our latest retrospective of thrillers made by writer-director M. Night Shyamalan. You know, for a guy who started out being hyped as the second coming of Hitchcock and Spielberg, Night sure has made some of the craziest, most brazenly stupid films ever to come out of the Hollywood studio system. But maybe not anymore. Fortunately for Night, his luck has turned, and we are now at the point in the retrospective where he's having box office success again. Take a listen to a clip from our review of Glass, Night's epic conclusion to a superhero saga he began 20 years ago. It's number one at the box office. I'll explain how you can hear our entire show immediately afterward.
Okay, he's been doing this for 6 years. I think Batman is fighting tougher people than teenagers punching random people in the street. It feels like very low stakes when David Dunn returns and we get to see him doing his superhero thing, going after kids that are punching people on the street and taping it and I guess putting it on YouTube.
It is something that you'd see on YouTube, right? Though, remember Fire in the Hole, where people would go to McDonald's and order a shake and throw it at the clerk? The Superman punch seems totally realistic for YouTube. And yeah, what an assholish thing to do. But when I see this guy coming in doing the Superman punch, I'm like, he's another superhero. We're going to have all these supers in here. No, he's just an asshole.
Yeah, it's keeping with the theme. Dennis was getting frustrated having to commit acts of violence to try and get this revolution and that fame. And here are two kids that are so motivated to be internet famous that they're willing to run up to total strangers and pummel them for cheap laughs. And so I don't think that this was David's mission. He was on walkabout trying to find details for the Horde, but he calls it potluck. If I see a crime happening, I can't let it go. And it's a good way of letting us know that he can win these kinds of fights. The kids get home, they're posting the footage, and then off go the lights.
That's his trademark, right? I mean, they call him the Overseer. They might as well call him the Lights Out Man, because constantly when he is going to fight, he is still wearing the hoodie, the slicker.
I just gotta imagine that restricts your movement. It's a bad costume. I get it. It stops him from getting wet, I guess. It's a tarp. But how easily can you throw a punch in that thing?
And it doesn't look like it breathes well. It looks like he'd get really sweaty even just walking. But in addition to having the oversized Emperor Palpatine-like hood on his head, he also turns out the lights. So he, I guess, looks a little bit like the Spectre of Death.
Yeah, he looks badass in silhouette, and I do think that's in contrast to the Horde, which is always talking about standing in the light. You're seeing someone that can take away the light. This seems like we're building towards a fair fight. This will be the equal for Green Guard, Overseer, whatever you want to call him.
And I do like that they carried over this relationship with his son, Joseph. He is basically like the Alfred Pennyworth now. You know, they got this front of a security store where they sell cameras to M. Night, who is both the drug dealer from Unbreakable and the security guard from Split. Same character, apparently.
You were wondering, Arnie, if it was.
Yeah, it is.
He says a lady disappeared from my building a few weeks ago.
It's all connected. Now we're going to find out that building has a narf.
Oh, this movie has a narf. I'll call it out.
There is a Lady in the Water reference. I'll point it out later.
But I'm glad that they kept the cast. I couldn't believe they got Spencer Tree Clark back. Not that he's hard to get.
Really? You couldn't believe? What's he been up to?
Yeah, well, that's the point. He's not seasoned enough to be it.
I looked him up. He has worked. He was in Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing and the remake of Last House on the Left. He's worked, but he's not worked so much that you'd expect him to be in a blockbuster film, but he looks the same. It was Boyhood. When we see flashbacks, or as I call them, he went to the deleted scenes on Unbreakable to put him in here, you see the same beady eyes.
Yeah, it surprised my wife because she didn't have a whole lot of memories of Unbreakable, but when they do that flashback and then go back to him, she's like, oh, it's the same actor. They got him back. I'm like, got him back from what? He didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's a logical progression. You know, the way they left it with him at the table, knowing his dad's secret, being impressed that his father was a superhero, I like the idea that he would be the guy scouring the internet for clues, feeding it into a headset that David could then go and kick the ass of whoever he finds.
Here's my question, and I'm guessing there's not an answer. We see this scene, and he's talking to his dad, and he's like, okay, here's this like triangle I've made of where the girls have disappeared and the zoo was there, but I think he's over in this other district where there's a factory. No reasons given, right? He's just like, I think he's over in a factory area.
Yes, but isn't random blind guesses the way to get all your answers solved?
That's what I'm pointing out.
Well, maybe. Or is it his superpower? Is he deductive man?
Yes, exactly. Because that's the explanation for everything random is that ultimately it's your genius.
I'm going to just spoil what I thought the ending of this movie would be. Each of our three main characters has a sidekick or a familiar. I thought the end of this movie was going to be that the three of them became the next generation of supers.
Oh my God.
I definitely thought that about one character.
Wouldn't that be so awesome if Mrs. Price like put on spandex?
She'd be the leader, right? And not she'd just be the brains. I thought maybe they'd have the same powers and they'd discover them. So I did take this as perhaps super deduction. I thought it was really weird too, but I thought that's where M. Night was leading me.
Well, he's leading him to the district because that's where a lot of men are pouring out after the whistle blows. And remember, David's power is that when he brushes by you, if he gets a touch, he can sense what crime you might have committed. And so he's going around there, even though there's a heavy police presence and the police are really out there trying to arrest any vigilante that's trying to catch the Horde. He is trying to find his lead and eventually bumps into Hedwig.
Yeah, wouldn't you think that the police would be out there trying to stop the Horde, not trying to stop the guy trying to stop the Horde?
You would think they would be trying to do both, but in Knight's world, remember, it's all about the haters, like the people trying to hold back potential. I do think that he likes to make authority figures the enemy. And it's true of comic books, too. I mean, the cops usually aren't on Batman's side.
Commissioner Gordon!
He's the only one, right?
Yeah, there's usually an antagonistic relationship.
And you don't need to have superpowers to know there's something wrong with this bald guy that's kicking grates and...
He could just be a crazy homeless dude. See him all the time around here in L.A.
You'd follow him. If you're looking for someone weird in the factory district, he wins. You'd follow him, but because he got the touch and there was bricks in the vision, he's torn. Do I follow the guy or do I look for the brick factory?
And he doesn't really... I mean, capturing is secondary. He wants to save the girls. He's the hero. Saving their life is step one. Stopping the Horde from capturing more is step two. But I wish he'd seen something crazier. If you touch a multiple personality disorder, what do you see? I would have loved to have seen something truly insane there.
Oh, I thought we were going to get that. He'd have, yeah, like 24 visions or something.
Mm-hmm. That would have been great. But no, he does just see the brick factory. And yeah, the man in the chair tells him, all right, you got to go the other way and get there.
What I'm more confused about is where Hedwig is going. If he is in fact going to the triangulated place across town where all the kidnappings happen, is Hedwig actually going to do something bad? Like when he finally gets there, it's an underground parking structure full of homeless people. Is he there to kill them? I just couldn't quite figure out. He ends up taking off his tracksuit and roaring, and my God, the Beast has a voice now. That was a questionable choice.
He talked last time when he talked to Casey saying how she's been hurt.
Yeah, he talks a lot more here, though. Yeah. I notice a lot more modulation in that voice now.
Yeah, it felt wronger here. I mean, once we learned that the personality is based on a lion, I'm like now thinking Thundercats as he's talking. It's just hard for me to be like, so is this your impersonation of what a lion would sound like in a cartoon?
What I found confusing is in Split, it seemed like he went to the place where he thought his dad had died, and that brought out the Beast. That was the area. I never got the impression he was like the Hulk, and he could just Hulk out anywhere, but now he just Hulks out into the Beast around some homeless people. Did he eat them?
I thought he ate them. I don't know why he didn't eat the cheerleaders first.
Yeah, just Hulk out in front of them and eat the cheerleaders. That's why he kidnapped them.
No, I thought he was making a declaration of I am you. Meaning, I see broken people that society has cast aside, and I am your champion. And the problem with that is, that's something he needs to learn from Glass. He wouldn't have had that awareness of his potential as a vigilante in this moment, at this time.
I think that it would have been more typical to see him doing this to the cheerleaders and David Dunn arrives just in the nick of time, right? That's what we're used to seeing. The fact that he's hulking out to these homeless people while Dunn is going and rescuing the cheerleaders is never resolved, honestly, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, I find if you're gonna subvert our expectations with the superhero film, which I think this film is gonna do a lot, I'm interested to see how people react because I definitely thought we were gonna get a different film than what is presented. But if you're gonna subvert our expectations, you gotta show us as a writer, as a director, that you understand what the cliches are, what the tropes are, what the steps are, so we know what you're doing. It's not just a happy accident. And yeah, we don't get any of those typical superhero moments at the beginning, which is where you put them. So when everything's subverted later, we get it. But this is a weirdly edited film. I just don't understand a lot of the choices why we go to certain scenes over other ones throughout it. It's confusing for me.
There's a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. If you watch the trailers, there are lines and scenes that are not in this movie. We never see Price's mother. They always underestimate the mastermind and things like that.
Yeah, which gave me the impression that Mrs. Price was in on the whole thing. Nope, that's not the situation here.
Which is why I thought she'd become one of the supers at the end.
I think this beginning is definitely truncated. You can see it. There's an obvious continuity problem. It is streaming daylight when David Dunn finds the brick factory, unchains the girls, and suddenly Beast is climbing on the pipes above them. Kind of reminds me of Alien 3. Like the coolest part of Alien 3 was when we had all of that upside down camera work. And they do their little fight, and when they go out the window, it's pitch night, fog, and rain. And we could see from those windows, sunlight was streaming in. So all I'm saying for sure is him going off and doing whatever with the homeless people and this jump from day to night indicates that there was a whole subplot of something that got cut.
He said the original cut was 3.5 hours, and I always took that to be like the work print cut or the assembly cut, where you always trim it down, but it feels like even to get to this over 2 hour runtime, his longest film ever, he cut vital stuff.
As I've already stated, Now Playing has lasted so long and been so free to dispense honest opinion because we have financial donors. And we want to reward that. If you can become a gold level donor right now, you are going to receive 11 exclusive shows that chronicle the career highs of M. Night Shyamalan. Those include Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs was a big hit, The Visit, Split, Glass. And yeah, we're going to tackle those epic lows as well, which frankly are just as much fun to deconstruct. The Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening. Last Airbender, After Earth, really fascinating fiascos. It's our way of saying thank you for making independent podcasting a priority in 2019. Plus, gold level donors are going to get the 5 silver level shows we put out last Halloween. And those were dedicated to Dario Argento, his classic witch trilogy, and that really is centered around Suspiria. And you can upgrade to the platinum level, get those 16 shows, plus 3 additional Jamie Lee Curtis horror movies, John Carpenter's The Fog, Terror Train, and the original Prom Night. Now, hopefully, I've inspired you. You understand how important this is. I sense you're ready to make that commitment. You're wondering, how can you start listening to all this exclusive content? I'll tell you. Head to our website. That's nowplayingpodcast.com. Click the banner at the top of the page. It's going to break down for you all the different levels of patronage. What is silver level? What is gold level? Gold and platinum are how you're going to get M. Night Shyamalan. But follow those instructions, and you're going to be making a big impact on our show and helping to underwrite another full year's worth of content. I am eternally grateful for all of those that are able to donate. We will be celebrating all 2019 with new shows, new series, returns of favorites. Thank you so much for your support. I will talk to you on Tuesday and hopefully very soon with our exclusive donor content. Thanks.
It has begun. Tell me something, David. When you woke up this morning, was it still there? The sadness?
No.
I think this is where we shake hands.
Your support helps keep Now Playing on the air.
You made that decision, and I find that very, very interesting. Now all I need is your credit card number.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I'm telling on you.
I'll tell you something. And you can tell me if I'm lying or not, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like a test.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
You should never do anything like this. You know that, right?
Yeah.
What do you do if something bad happens?
Get Mom.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
It is more dramatic than that. They are what they believe they are.
The brain has learned to defend itself.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You can't let bad things happen to good people, right? That's your code, right? That's the hero's code.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2019, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I hope this makes you feel calm. You will be in the presence of something greater.